And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, asking you to get out a pencil and paper because there might be something you want to write down. Names, dates, usual suspects, web pages. You never know what might come to mind during the next half hour that you want to be able to act on later on. And that's what this update is all about, finding things to act on. All right, let's start out with announcements. These are things you can get done. Coming up this weekend is the National River Cleanup Day, and our local river, the San Lorenzo River, is slated to be cleaned up May 17th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Celebrate National River Cleanup Day by cleaning the San Lorenzo River from the mountains to the sea. There are three cleanup sites, one in Santa Cruz up by Highway 1 Bridge, Bicycle Bridge, up in that area. I believe they're going to meet there in Henry Cowell State Park at the main visitor center. I think they're going to meet there, and up at the covered bridge in Felton. So bring a sturdy pair of gloves if you have them, layers of clothing for our changing weather. If you have any questions, emerson.kanawi@ccc.ca.gov. That's emerson.kanawi@ccc.ca.gov for more information. May 17th, Saturday, 9 to 11. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team, is having a special project restoration this Saturday, May 17th, from 9 to noon. They'll meet up early at 9 o'clock and then caravan to the Coast Dairies property. I'll give you the information about that. And again, next Saturday, May 24th, again, 9 a.m. to noon at the Coast Dairies project property special project. Ken Moore from the Wildlands Restoration Team will be leading these two projects. Ken has been working at the Coast Dairies project, removing invasive non-native purple star thistle. The Coast Dairies property, owned for a century by the Coast Dairies and Land Company, was the third largest privately held piece of California coast from San Francisco to the Mexican border. This unique 7,000-acre property surrounds the small town of Davenport, boasts six watersheds and more than 7 miles of coastal resources, including beaches, hundreds of acres of agricultural lands, redwood forests, and endangered species habitat. Come on out and give a helping hand protecting this spectacular land. Directions to the Coast Dairies property. Due to no public access, we will be meet up at the parking lot across from the Whale City Bakery in Davenport at 9 in the morning. That means you've got to get to Davenport by 9 a.m., and from there they'll caravan to the location. Take Highway 1 north through Santa Cruz, 11 miles to Davenport. Look for the bakery on your right, park on the left. The Habitat Restoration Team, and that's this. There's two weekends, this Saturday, May 17th from 9 to noon, and Saturday, May 24th from 9 to noon. Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitats in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear a comfortable layer of clothing. Bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. Hey, work rain or shine. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. I can't imagine how it would get particularly unpleasant up the coast this weekend. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and water. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number is 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Or by email at redwoodrn. That's REDWDRN at packbell.net. Or go to the webpage, www.cruzcnps.com. .org. Coming up in a week or so, the Alameda Creek Alliance is having their Spring Creek cleanup on May 31st. Help us clean up trash for known trout spawning habitat along Stony Brook Creek on Sunday, May 31st. We meet at the Dirt Turnout at mile marker 8.75 on Palomares Road over in the East Bay. About a mile up from Niles Canyon Road, there's a dirt turnout on the right as you come up the canyon, and there is an Adopt-a-Spot sign at this location. Please bring clothes that can get dirty and hope they're sturdy. gloves if you have them. We also have gloves if you need them. And sturdy shoes or boots are recommended. This is a steep, rugged location. If you don't feel comfortable on uneven ground, this isn't the event for you. They'll go until... they don't say what time they start, do they? Probably 9 a.m. They'll go to 12:30 or until all the trash is removed. Be aware that parking is limited at the site, so please carpool if you can. To ask questions or to RSVP by email to ralph@alamedacreek.org. That's Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, at alamedacreek.org. How to get there from Pleasanton, go down Miles Canyon Road 4 miles. From the town of Sunol, turn right on Palomares Road, a mile up the canyon, turn out on the right from Fremont, go up 2 miles on Niles Canyon Road from Mission Boulevard, turn left on Palomares Road, again a mile up the canyon, turn out on the right. The Earth First Climbers Camp, June 16th through the 22nd in the Driftless area of the Midwest, and... The Earth First Climbers Guild will host a climbing camp from June 16th to 22nd in the Driftless area of the Upper Midwest, southeastern Minnesota, southwestern Wisconsin. Attendees will learn everything from the basics of ascending and descending a rope and setting anchors to the more advanced skills of platform rigging and creating pod structures. All that's left is then to use these skills to stop the corporate ecocidal monster from destroying your bioregion. What to bring? Pack like you're going camping with a sleeping bag, tent, rain gear, appropriate clothing for southern Minnesota with all those bugs. Maybe a little rain, too. Good climbing shoes. Those are any shoe with a stiff sole. You'll need gloves. Bike gloves are great, but anything snug and flexible will work. Pants that you can climb and be comfortable in. Loose, stretchy, breathable material. If you have your own climbing gear, bring it. Also, bring food. They'll have a kitchen that will cook it for you. Probably vegan is preferred, and bring some money. If you can, $25 to $50 for the week. However, no one turned away for lack of funds. Don't bring your dog, don't bring drugs, and don't bring a bad attitude. They will provide knowledgeable trainers, climbing gear if you don't have it, and a full kitchen. They will have more details and a training schedule as the date approaches. Go to efclimbers.net. efclimbers.net. And the 2014 Earth First Round River Rendezvous will take place in probably Southern Oregon, Northern California, don't know exactly where it is, July 1st through the 7th. If you're an ecocentric or biocentric activist, dissidents, dreamers, doers, rabble-rousers, troublemakers, no FBI, please. They're going to have the annual Earth First Round River Rendezvous in Southern Cascadia. July 1st through 7th is a critical time for our movement in the Pacific Northwest. Coal and oil companies are trying to use the Columbia River. Alberta tar sands machinery is moving through the regions. Road builders are clearing ancient oak trees and draining wetlands. And all of it is on the chopping block. From the Redwood Coast to the Cascade Mountains, chainsaws threaten to destroy what trees are left. Yet in the spirit of Cascadia, we're fighting back, sitting in trees, blocking roads, marching and howling, standing in solidarity with our friends. Come to the Rondi for a week, stay for a Cascadian summer, and plug into regional campaigns. We will post more info in the spring, directions in mid-June if you've never been to a Rondi. Come expecting fireside songs and stories, hikes in the wilderness, workshops, group meals, friendship, and all the kinds of rowdiness Earth First has come to enjoy over the years. Cascadia loves to party. We can't wait to host for the wild and the rowdy. The 2014 Round River Rendezvous organizing crew, their webpage, www.2014rrr.org, and Uncle Dennis will be there. Sea Shepherd diver has been viciously attacked by a wildlife trafficker in this story from Sea Shepherd, as found on the Earth First Newswire. A diver documenting an aquarium trade wildlife collection operation on a Hawaiian reef off the Kona coast as part of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's Operation Reef Defense was nearly killed by a reef fish collector in an unprovoked and highly dangerous attack last week. As Sea Shepherd divers approached the coral reef, they came across two other divers poking the coral and collecting fish. As Sea Shepherd filmed from a distance, one of the collectors noticed the camera from afar and quickly rushed at diver Renee Umberger without warning and pulled the air regulator from her mouth. This device is what provides oxygen from a diver's air tank, and forcibly removing it from a diver's mouth can become deadly in a matter of seconds. The divers were at a depth of approximately 50 feet in the ocean, kind of deep, and a diver with less experience than Renee would quickly have become panicked and disoriented, leaving them unable to replace their regulator or making a dangerous attempt to quickly swim back to the surface. Fortunately, Renee was able to put her air regulator back in place, and despite some of the damage that was done to it, and the divers continued to document the incident on video as the reef wildlife trafficker continued to make threatening gestures. This violent assault is nothing short of attempted murder. The fish trafficker responsible should be charged and held responsible to the fullest extent of the law. All of us at Sea Shepherd are relieved that Renee is okay, but a less accomplished diver may not have been so lucky, as Sea Shepherd USA Administrative Director Susan Hartland says. Sea Shepherd founder Captain Paul Watson had this to say upon viewing the video. This incident shows just how far fish collectors are willing to go in their greedy operations that are turning reef ecosystems once teeming with life into barren wastelands. The reefs are dying in our time, and Sea Shepherd remains committed to exposing the destruction caused by the lucrative global aquarium trade, Watson said. Mike Long, Sea Shepherd's Reef Defense Coordinator, added, as part of Reef Defense in Hawaii, Sea Shepherd is engaged in working with the island community to support their initiative to respect the ocean and coral reef wildlife. This incident was very unfortunate, and we know that it is not representative of the people of Hawaii. The aquarium trade is a dark hobby. We are grateful to be here and involved in a movement to protect such a remarkable ecosystem. The world's coral reefs, often referred to as rainforests of the sea, are in a state of immediate crisis. Sea Shepherd launched its campaign, Operation Reef Defense, in order to preserve these critical and biologically diverse ecosystems that provide habitat to approximately 25% of all marine species. Human activities include overfishing, coastal development, pollution, and climate change, as well as the removal of reef wildlife for the aquarium hobby trade, have had a devastating impact, leaving 25% of the world's reefs gone and more than 60% damaged or at risk of collapse. An estimated 350,000 reef animals are taken off the Kona coast of Hawaii alone each year and sold into the aquarium trade. More than 90% of those fish will be dead within 1 year, either from initially from the stress of capture and transport or the stressful conditions of captivity. While most people are under the impression that the animals that they purchase at hobby stores for their tanks are captive bred, in reality, more than 98% of the fish sold are wild caught. If you have an aquarium, keep that in mind. As the aquarium trade expands, the reefs will continue to suffer as a result of the removal of species from reef ecosystems. Just in Hawaii, the top 10 aquarium fish species have decreased by 59% over the last 20 years. Full tanks equal empty reefs, and empty reefs mean dying oceans. Sea Shepherd will continue to defend the reefs, preserving the future of the oceans on which all species on Earth depend for survival. And you can check them out at seashepherd.org. Here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Mother buffalo and their family groups have undertaken important yet difficult migrations, trekking many miles from Yellowstone's high elevations over periods of weeks and months to access critical winter range and spring calving grounds in Montana. They simply seek a quiet place to survive, to rebuild their own strength and raise their precious young. Weak from the winter and swollen with new life, the relief for pregnant buffalo of finding sufficient food is enormous. Sadly, after such effort, wild buffalo are forced to quickly evacuate the ground that they may take the course of a season to reach. In the throes of pregnancy, birthing, or raising an infant, wild buffalo are aggressively driven off their native homelands by the irrational politics of Montana's livestock industry and the state and federal agents who are just doing a job by carrying out these policies on the ground. Hazing activities resumed last Thursday and took place again on Friday, Monday, and Wednesday, and they are likely taking place again as Uncle Dennis reads you these words. Each operation originated south of Horse Butte in the Denny Creek South Fork area of the Hebgen Basin, an area highly favored by wild buffalo and other wildlife, but livestock interests refuse access only to the buffalo. Now, in the height of calving season, more newborn buffalo that are just getting their legs are having their first experiences of life brutally interrupted by yelling cowboys who come tearing in on horseback to chase their families away. And no short distance, but for miles over fields, through fences, across rivers and creeks, through thick woods, over fallen timber, down gravel roads, and into muddy flats, all with no rest and no chance to nurse or get a drink of water or even a bite of grass. Calves collapse from exhaustion, mothers bluff charge to defend their babies, bulls stop and spar in frustration. The horsemen press them on. Buffalo that are in the throes of labor or that have literally just given birth are not spared. The agencies involved in these wild bison harassment operations this week included the Montana Department of Livestock, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and the Yellowstone National Park. Barely a mile of the stretch of land that the buffalo are chased from is in areas occupied by a few private landowners who don't welcome wild buffalo. The remainder of the 10-plus miles they are forced to flee through is national forest, public land, critical wildlife habitat where there are no cattle and no conflict and nothing close to justification for such assaults. On Monday, after miles of hazing, agents forced the buffalo across the Madison River towards the northwest bluffs. But they didn't stop there as they had been doing. They loaded up their horses, drove around the bluffs, and resumed hazing the tired buffalo along the northwest bluffs, pushing the buffalo, ironically, towards Horse Butte. How does this make any sense when next week, when they will be hazing buffalo away from Horse Butte into Yellowstone National Park? Ignoring exhaustion in the calves they were pushing, and even after we called their attention to an injured yearling, they forced them to march for another few miles towards the butte. On Wednesday, the course changed. The chase continued east and crossed Highway 191 into Yellowstone National Park. A hint of the large-scale operations that will soon descend upon the Hebgen Basin, forcing all wild buffalo out of Montana simply because the livestock industry hasn't learned how to share, but has made a killing by controlling the land. This update has been by the Buffalo Field Campaign. You can reach them at their website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. They have extensive lists there of things that they need and ways you can become involved. If you want to send a donation, send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, the zip code 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070. And once again, the webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And a bear has attacked a Suncor's worker and killed them. From Warrior Publications, as found in the Earth First Newswire. A Suncor employee has been killed by a bear at the company's oil sands base 25 kilometers north of Fort McMurray in Alberta, Canada. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police said they were called in just after 2 p.m. a week ago after receiving reports of a large male black bear attacking and killing a worker at the Suncor base camp. The female worker was declared dead on the scene. RCMP members shot and killed the male bear who was still in the area when they arrived. Wood Buffalo RCMP have now turned the scene over to the Alberta Environment and Sustainable Resource Development workers. A spokesman for Occupational Health and Safety said it would be conducting its own investigation into the woman's death, working alongside Suncor and officers with the Fish and Wildlife Division. Barry Harrison said Occupational Health and Safety would be looking into exactly what happened, including whether the worker was alone at the time of the attack, and as well as examining how the company assesses and guards against hazards like wild animals on the site. We have a lot of different environments in this province of ours, having lots of different types of wildlife, too, he said. For the most part, companies are very good at understanding what the hazards are and having mechanisms in place to deal with those hazards. Harrison said attacks like this are very rare in the province. I do know that. Certainly from an occupational health and safety perspective, this is the first that I'm aware of having a worker either seriously injured or killed by a bear of any variety. We are extending our heartfelt condolences to the family, and we have activated counseling for our people on site and are encouraging them to take part in that service if they need to, said Suncor spokeswoman Chanel Sital. Satal, who said she has never heard of anything like this before, said the attack happened at the company base camp. It's a big operation, a big facility, so I wouldn't categorize it as a remote facility, she said. Although Satal was unable to comment whether there were fences surrounding the facility, she said that all workers participate in regular wildlife interaction training sessions. We don't know why this happened. We are reminding people to be especially vigilant in dealing with wildlife. That's why it's so important we conduct a full investigation and work with the regulatory bodies to determine what happened in this tragic situation, she added. Satal said the company is not in the process of informing the victim's family, and the worker's name has not yet been released. And in California, wildlife officers have arrested a convicted Sacramento poacher for continued violations. California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers arrested a convicted poacher who continued violating fish and wildlife laws after his fishing license was permanently revoked. Nai Choi Saley, aged 30, of Sacramento, continued poaching using a fraudulent fishing license obtained with the aid of his brother. In 2010, Nai Choi Saley was arrested for and pleaded guilty to poaching abalone and illegally possessing abalone for sale, which led to a lifetime revocation of his fishing license by the Mendocino County Superior Court. California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers alleged that during each of the last 3 years since the license revocation, Saley, with the assistance of his brother Peter Choi Saley, aged 25, fraudulently obtained a fishing license using his brother's identification. Nai Choi Saley continued poaching and selling fish for profit in the Sacramento black market using the fraudulently obtained fishing license. Wildlife officers alleged that in those 3 years, Nai Choi Saley accrued two additional misdemeanor poaching citations under his brother's name and was under investigation for a third before they were able to prove he was using a fraudulently obtained fishing license. A hunting or fishing license revocation remains one of the best tools to keep poachers in check, said CDFW Captain David Bess. This case represents the determination of a convicted poacher with a revoked fishing license to continue to sell California's fish and wildlife for personal profit. On Friday, April 25th, wildlife officers arrested Nai Choi Saley at his Sacramento residence for illegally taking fish for profit and for unlawfully obtaining and possessing a fishing license acquired by means of fraud and deceit. He was booked into Sacramento County Jail. An investigation continues to determine whether Peter Choi Saley's level of involvement in, Nai Choi's brother, what his involvement in the license fraud conspiracy was. And foamy bark canker fungus is killing California's oak trees up and down the coast in this story by Megan McCarty of Take Two. A fungus never before seen in California oak trees is threatening the state's coastal live oaks from Orange County to Monterey. Researchers at UC Riverside issued an alert after they found a high incidence of the fungus in six counties, including Orange, Los Angeles, Riverside, Ventura, Santa Barbara, and Monterey. The fungus causes a condition known as foamy bark canker disease, which leaves large weeping cankers in the bark of affected trees, with foam seeping several feet down the trunk. The cankers may be covered in a cinnamon-colored gum with creamy-colored foam. Sounds almost yummy. Reports of infestation by the fungus Geosmithia pallida began just 6 months ago, according to UC Riverside plant pathologist Akif Eskelin. It's carried by a beetle that is native to the state, but has never previously been found to carry this particular fungus. The western oak bark beetle bores into oak trees to lay its eggs and deposits the fungus inside also. The fungus grows to block the circulation of water and nutrients up the tree, killing branches and eventually the whole tree. Researchers have asked the public to contact your local agricultural official if you notice any symptoms of fungus on trees in your area. And the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and university researchers use forensic genomics to track down a killer. Similar to the CSI television series, California Department of Fish and Wildlife and university researchers have used a multidisciplinary approach they call forensic genomics to investigate a mysterious die-off of red abalone and other species along the Sonoma coast of Northern California. A paper describing this new approach was published in Nature. In 2011, large numbers of red abalone, sea stars, sea urchins, and other marine invertebrates were found dead along 62 miles of Sonoma County coastline. The die-off, which occurred in relatively shallow water, did not affect fish. The environmental scientists Laura Rogers Bennett of CDFW and Pierre DeWitt of Stanford University collaborated with others to determine exactly what caused the die-off. CDFW wildlife officers collected samples of the first dead abalone that washed ashore, and CDFW biologists who had just completed abalone monitoring dives for the year gathered forces to complete a new set of reconnaissance dives to assess the damage and collect water samples from the area. An unprecedented red tide or algae bloom that coincided with the die-off was suspected of playing a role in the event. At the time, Rogers Bennett noted that if the cause of the die-off is linked to a harmful algae bloom, it would be the first scientifically confirmed report of such an occurrence off the Sonoma coast. Samples of the dead abalone tested negative for the usual algae bloom-related suspects that occur along the coast, including domoic acid and paralytic shellfish toxin. Researchers did notice that Gonialax algae, which sometimes produces toxins, was abundant in water samples. However, the single time Gonialax toxin has been previously detected in California waters, it did not cause a die-off. DeWitt has joined Rogers Bennett only a few months before the die-off to gather red abalone samples at Fort Ross. The two plan to use the samples to sequence the red abalone's whole transcriptome, genetic material that tells where genes are turned on and off at the time of sampling. Neither researcher could have realized at the time that the transcriptome would play a key role in identifying the culprit behind the die-off. Because scientists knew which genes turn on and off when exposed to various natural toxins, they can identify the toxins that cause an animal's illness or death through genetic examination. After the die-off, the two researchers took samples of surviving abalone at Fort Ross and compared the transcriptomes of abalone sampled before and after the event. His genetic comparison showed that the surviving abalone had all been exposed to Gonialax toxin. And looking forward, the key to using forensic genomics successfully to gather baseline genetic information from wildlife populations before the next mass critical events. So, anyway, that's going to be it for news tonight on the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of this show, tune in tomorrow afternoon to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM at 3 p.m. for a rebroadcast of the Earth First Update. If you happen to be in Moscow, Idaho on Monday night at 9:30, you can tune in to KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, on 90.3 FM, their high-power frequency. Or if you wanted to download or listen online, go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, and search for the Earth First Update. Don't forget the exclamation point. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening. I do also want to ask you to support radioforall.net. Since 1996, radioforall.net has been archiving radio shows and other programs produced by independent programmers for independent radio stations. They are currently in dire need of donations, both of hardware and cash. So please go to the website, radioforall.net, and click on the banner up on the top or on the right, and support radioforall.net. And for the Earth First Update, tune in next week, and thank you for listening.